the Holy Quran is once again desecrated in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, despite growing outrage across the Muslim world. Iran warns that any normalization of ties between Islamic countries and Israel would undermine peace and stability in the region. And Niger's junta says a former colonial power, France, is seeking to intervene militarily to reinstate deposed president Mohamed Bazoum. Welcome. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashim. I appreciate you being with us. Well, the Holy Quran has been desecrated in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, once again, despite growing outrage across the Muslim world. Two men named Salwan Momika and Salwan Najem burned pages of the Holy Book in front of the Swedish parliament. Police had granted the permit in advance. Momika has carried out the same actions twice before, in the past 40 days outside of Stockholm's main mosque and later outside of the Iraqi embassy. Both incidents led to outrage and condemnation worldwide. Meanwhile, Denmark has reacted to similar actions there following the backlash over such incidents. On Sunday, the Danish Foreign Ministry said it is exploring legal means of stopping the desecration of holy books. The Swedish Prime Minister also said a similar process was already underway in his country.
Ashura, the 10th day of the month of Muharram on the Islamic calendar, is a day when millions of Shia Muslims worldwide commemorate the Prophet Muhammad's grandson, Imam Hussein, who was martyred by forces loyal to the tyrant of the time some 14 centuries ago. Traditionally, the legacy of tragic event has been mourned inside the Muslim world, but is now spreading to new regions, including in areas where hostility towards Islam remains high. Thousands of Shia Muslims living in Denmark marched through central Copenhagen Saturday to raise awareness among new Western audiences of Imam Hussein's struggle for justice.
Prior to the arrival of Shia Muslims to Denmark, very few Danes would have even have heard of Imam Hussein or his great sacrifice at Karbala all those centuries ago. However, now the community faces a new challenge, not only to educate the locals about Islam, but how to effectively combat the shocking rise of aggressive anti-Islam activism from far-right activists.
In this year's march, demonstrators held copies of the Quran as a peaceful response to the recent desecrations of the Holy Book by the far right, witnessed in Denmark and other Scandinavian countries. The desecration of religious sanctities is a vile practice which local authorities refuse to ban despite the great distress caused across the Islamic world.
When we talk to journalists from Danish TVs, they don't understand why we react, some of us, on a different way than just ignoring the burning. What we are afraid of is that it can start with burning the Holy Quran, it can continue with other holy scripture, but that is not what we are afraid of. We are afraid of that it would end as it did with Jews in Germany. Today we have had up to 12,000 participants, and they are growing every year. MashaAllah. This is one of the good things of promoting Imam Hussein, and especially his principles.
Ironically, despite becoming a hotbed of Islamophobic acts, Denmark boasts the largest Shia Muslim mosque in Europe. Local worshippers say despite the hatred shown by some individuals, many other Danes are learning more about Islam, with Imam Hussein's story central to their understanding of Islamic teachings and values. Robert Carter, Copenhagen.
Well, Tehran says it will vigorously continue efforts and support lasting peace, stability, and security in the region. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the announcement at a joint presser with his Syrian counterpart Faisal Mehdad in Tehran. He condemned Israel's attacks on Syria, calling the regime the main instigator of instability in the region. The top diplomat also touched upon agreements between Tehran and Damascus, saying they are now in the implementation phase. He added that the two sides are working to reach more agreements in various sectors, including the economy and transit. Faisal Mehdad, for his part, slammed Washington's military presence in the Arab state under the pretext of fighting terrorist groups. He called for the immediate withdrawal of all illegitimate forces from Syrian soil. Mehdad also reaffirmed his country's determination to strengthen cooperation with regional states in defiance of the West's obstructionism. Iran says any new move towards normalization between Islamic countries and Israel would only help the regime intensify its crimes against Palestinians. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said in his weekly presser that the same happened with the previous normalization deals with the regime. The spokesman added that Iran regards any step to recognize Israel and establish ties with the regime as damaging to the Palestinian cause and regional peace. Kanani said the regime has based its strategy on creating insecurity and instability in the region. The spokesman also pointed out to the United States' unwavering support for Israel. He said Washington has been offering unconditional support to the regime as a top priority. Israeli troops have detained a dozen Palestinians during a large-scale raid in the occupied West Bank. Among the detainees, there were a former Palestinian prisoner who was released only recently and a minor. The incursions led to armed confrontations with Palestinian resistance fighters in the cities of Jenin and Tumbas. According to the military wing of the Hamas resistance movement, the clashes disabled an Israeli armored vehicle in Jenin. Israeli military regularly launches deadly raids across the West Bank. So far this year, the regime has killed over 200 Palestinians in its raids. A second day of clashes erupts in southern Lebanon between forces of Palestinian political party Fatah and other Palestinian factions. Now, the fighting in Ain al-Helwa refugee camp near the southern coast of city of Sidon first flared up on Sunday. It came after a Fatah commander was killed in an ambush. Lebanese prime minister has called for an end to the tensions. Najib Mikati also called on the involved factions to cooperate with the Lebanese army to bring the situation under control. The hostilities have so far claimed 9 lives. A ceasefire deal mediated by Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement has also failed to end the fighting. Some 400,000 displaced Palestinians live in 12 refugee camps in Lebanon. The camps mainly lie outside the jurisdiction of Lebanese security services. Our correspondent in Lebanon, Maryam Saleh, joined us earlier. She explained that Takfiri groups could have been involved in the recent tensions.
And the thing is, there is still a lot of confusion on what exactly triggered this. Of course, it was the ambush against one of the members of Fatah, and he is a very prominent member of Fatah. But whether it was one of the Takfiri groups in the camp that caused this ambush and continue to launch these clashes, that is on one side. But there is also a scenario and a possibility that there is a group within Fatah that is, of course, with the coordination that continues in Palestine between the Palestinian Authority and Israel, and that this difference, and we have also different certain figures in Fatah, and one of them was the one who was al-Mushi, the one that was assassinated. He was against any coordination with Israel. He was on with the fact that Fatah move away from any sort of security agreements with Israel, and that there needs to be more support for the resistance. However, you do have some groups and figures that are more close to the fact that there needs to be cooperation with Israel. They are agents of Israel. Whether they are the ones that are being pushed by Israel in order to continue these clashes and create this mayhem in the southern city of Saida, or it is those dormant hubs of the Takfiri groups that are probably pushing for this in order to also paralyze the situation in light of the crisis that Lebanon is living, of course, political, economic, financial, on all levels.
Niger's junta says former colonial power France is plotting to intervene militarily to reinstate the deposed president.
In its search for ways and means to intervene militarily in Niger, France, with the complicity of some Nigerians, held a meeting with the chief of staff of the Nigerian National Guard to obtain the necessary political and military authorization.
French President Emmanuel Macron has vowed immediate and uncompromising action if French citizens or interests are attacked. On Sunday, thousands rallied outside the French embassy to condemn Paris for suspending aid to the West African country. Some of them tried to enter the compound, but were dispersed with tear gas. Protesters also demanded the immediate departure of all Western troops, including those from France. Niger's pro-West president, Mohamed Bazoum, has vowed not to resign, even though he has been held for 5 days following a coup toppling his government. Now, the junta has also arrested the president of the former ruling party, as well as the oil and mining ministers. Moving on to other news this hour, a Ukrainian drone has hit a police station in Russia's Bryansk border region, damaging the building. Local authorities said that there were no casualties. Now, Ukraine has recently been targeting civilian structures in different parts of Russia by drones. Russian Defense Ministry says it brought down 44 Ukrainian drones only on Sunday. Moscow has condemned the attacks, saying they would not be possible without Western aid. The cross-border strikes come as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned of the war coming to Russia. This is while Kiev's biggest ally, the United States, has distanced itself from the Ukrainian strikes. Washington says it did not encourage or enable the attacks inside of Russian territory. Russia and a number of African nations have held a summit aimed at finding a solution to the war in Ukraine and consequently bringing a halt to a grain crisis that is threatening the lives of millions of people across Africa. With the withdrawal of Russia from the Ukraine grain agreement, will African nations find a reliable source to fulfill their basic necessities?
African leaders have once again traveled to Russia in an effort to discuss solutions to the war in Ukraine and subsequently bring an end to a grain crisis already threatening the continent. Addressing the summit were representatives from 49 of Africa's 54 nations, including 17 heads of state and 4 heads of government in attendance. Putin said Russia was ready to replace Ukraine grain export to Africa on both a commercial and aid basis to fulfill Moscow's critical role in global food security. Putin said Moscow will be ready to provide Burkina Faso, Zimbabwe, Mali, Somalia, Central African Republic, and Eritrea with 25,000 to 50,000 tons of free grain each in the next 3 to 4 months. Putin also hit back at countries critical of Moscow's decision to quit the Black Sea grain deal, saying a parallel memorandum promising to facilitate Russian grain and fertilizer exports had been ignored. Putin noted that over 70% of Ukrainian grain exported under the deal had gone to countries with above-average income. The Russian president said poorest countries like Sudan had been, quote, screwed over and received less than 3% of the shipments. Putin criticized Western sanctions imposed on Moscow in response to the war in Ukraine, saying on the one hand, Western countries are obstructing supplies of our grain and fertilizers, while on the other, they hypocritically blame us for the current crisis situation on the world food market. Moscow argues that restrictions on payments, logistics, and insurance are a barrier to shipments. The summit in St. Petersburg comes a month after African leaders presented their peace initiative to both Putin and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, but it has so far failed to gain traction with either side. Moscow said it respected their peace proposal on Ukraine and was carefully studying it.
The U.S. dollar's hegemonic aspirations, Washington's unilateral sanctions on countries like Iran, China, Russia, and Venezuela, as well as the looming global food crisis, are leading to calls for a multipolar world. Evidence of that can be seen in the emergence of new alliances among major non-Western economies like China, Russia, and Brazil.
But apart from grain, the St. Petersburg summit also focused on opposition to neocolonialism. Addressing the summit, President Putin said,
pointed out our joint determination to oppose neocolonialism, illegal sanctions, and attempts to undermine traditional moral values. We confirmed our determination to hold summits once in 3 years.
The Russian president reiterated that the summit was seeking a multipolar world order based on international law and mutual respect.
The result of our work is a solid pack of documents. Firstly, I will point out the St. Petersburg Declaration. It talks about a strategic long-term partnership between Russia and African countries. It also talks about the dedication of all our countries to forming a just and multipolar world order based on universally recognized principles of international law and the UN Charter.
Putin further noted that the BRICS countries, namely Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, are taking measures to develop their economic trade relations in their own currencies in an effort to ditch the US dollar.
Our BRICS countries are developing relations in national currencies and settlements are increasing. In this regard, it seems to me that the bank can also play an important role in the development of our joint activities.
He hailed BRICS for developing their trade relations while also taking a jab at the United States for using the dollar as a political tool against other nations.
What is happening in the world of finances and the use of dollar is an instrument of political struggle. But the members of our organization, the BRICS, are not friends against anyone. They're working in each other's interests.
The comments by the Russian president from one side and the St. Petersburg summit attended by the African leaders from the other are clear indications of a shift toward a multipolar world. African nations have been distancing themselves from the West and moving closer to Moscow for help amid coups and other instabilities across their continent. The war in Ukraine has played the role of a catalyst in this regard. From the global dominance of the US dollar to supply chains and international alliances, everything is in the direction of a multipolar world. Washington unilateral sanctions on Russia, Iran, and China, and many other countries have prompted these nations to form new alliances with the aim of creating alternative payment and financial systems outside US control. With market chains raising prices in a number of countries like Germany from one hand and looming global food shortages on the other, it seems that the need for countries like Russia, China, India, Brazil, and Iran to form their alliance in the face of US unilateralism is gaining momentum. Maybe that's why the Russian president talks of a bright future in the emerging multipolar world.
And with that brings us to the end of this Worldness edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
in the limelight.
New research by scientists from the Indian Institute of Science, IISC, and Japan's Niigata University has discovered water droplets in mineral deposits that are believed to be from an ancient ocean that existed around 600 million years ago. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. WION News Agency reported scientists from the Indian Institute of Science, Bengaluru, and Niigata University, Japan, have discovered droplets of water trapped in mineral deposits that were likely left behind from the pristine ocean. After analyzing the deposits, which had both calcium and magnesium carbonates, the researchers said that the discovery could provide key insights into a significant oxygenation event in Earth's past. Prakash Chandra Arya, a PhD student at the Center for Earth Sciences, IISC, and the researcher's lead author, said in his study published in Precambrian Research, "These mineral deposits are like time capsule for paleo oceans." According to the researchers' thesis, Earth was once covered with thick sheets of ice between 700 and 500 million years ago, known as the Snowball Earth Glaciation, one of the major glacial events in Earth's history. Then it was followed by the second great oxygenation event, which increased the amount of oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere and led to the evolution of complex life forms. However, scientists have not fully comprehended how these events were connected due to the lack of well-preserved fossils and the disappearance of all past oceans that existed in the Earth's history. They believe that exposure of such marine rocks in the Himalayas can offer some clues to the Earth's past climate. Prakash says, "We don't know much about past oceans. How different or similar were they compared to present-day oceans? Were they more acidic or basic? Nutrient-rich or deficient? Warm or cold? And what was their chemical and isotopic composition?" He added, "Such insights could also provide clues about the Earth's past climate, and this information can be useful for climate modeling." Recent study states that the deposit found by the team showed that the sedimentary basins were deprived of calcium for a prolonged period of time, probably due to low riverine input. This lack of calcium led to increased magnesium levels, with the resulting magnesium deposits trapping ancient ocean water as they crystallized. Sajeev Krishnan, professor at CEAS and corresponding author of the recent study, says, "During this time, there was no flow in the oceans, and hence no calcium input. When there is no flow or calcium input, as more calcium precipitates, the amount of magnesium goes up." The study states that calcium deprivation may have caused nutrient deficiency and created favorable conditions for slow-growing photosynthetic cyanobacteria. These organisms could have begun releasing more oxygen into the atmosphere, contributing to the second great oxygenation event, their research argues. The study was conducted across a vast stretch of the western Koman Himalayas, from Amritpur to the Milam Glacier and Dehradun to the Gangori Glacier region. Using extensive laboratory analysis, scientists were able to confirm that the deposits originated due to precipitation from the ancient ocean water and not from other places, such as the Earth's interior, for example, from submarine volcanic activity. According to Mint News Agency, scientists believe that the Earth may have been covered by thick sheets of ice between 700 and 500 million years ago, known as the Snowball Earth Glaciation. This event was followed by the second great oxygenation event, which led to an increase in the amount of oxygen in the Earth's atmosphere, which led to the evolution of complex life forms.
علي حبه جنة وسيم النار والجنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس والجنة.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin. Wassalatu wassalamu ala sayyidina Muhammadin wa ala ahli baytihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood based on the teachings of Imam Ali alayhi salam in Nahjul Balagha. And we are currently focusing on the first sermon, and we have been discussing a few phrases which talk about the continuity of the prophetic mission, and we talked about some elements that either of these elements have to be present for the prophetic mission to be continuous. And the fourth element which we talked about was the presence of what we called mahajjatun qa'imah. That means a clear path, a path that is acceptable, that has been accepted by everyone, and that has the source of this acceptance is the presence of prophets and their teachings in that society. Meaning that now there is a path that is clear in front of them, and they might not even realize that they are actually applying the teachings of the prophets, but they are in reality doing that. So this is something what we call mahajjatun qa'imah. And we also talked about an example of that in the riwayat that encourage us, that encourage human beings to adhere to these concepts that have been agreed due to the influence of the prophets on the communities. Inshallah, we shall discuss about this in the coming segment.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, it so happens that sometimes in societies there might be an understanding that exists among the people, a very clear understanding, something that they apply in their lives as principles. And these principles actually are those that have been inherited from prophetic people, from prophets of God. But people sometimes may not realize, and as time passes afterwards, they may realize that, you know, actually this was from the teachings of the prophets. But it creates, but these teachings together, all in all, they create a path for someone, a kind of a lifestyle which a person lives. He may not recognize that actually this is from prophetic teachings, but it is there. It is what we call a mahajja, a road that has been created due to the coming of the prophets over the periods of time. If you notice, even right now, generally human beings are like that. If you talk to human beings about justice, they say, yes, we want justice for all. Even some of the oppressive governments, their slogan is justice. They talk about fighting against oppression. They talk about rights, equal rights to people, human rights, animal rights, environmental rights. All these are things that have been encouraged by the prophets of God. I'm not saying that these human rights that presently are there in the different parts of the world, especially propagated by the United Nations and such big bodies, is definitely something that has been brought down by the prophets. No, not at all. I'm not claiming that at all, because there are flaws in all of these laws and these rights. What I'm saying is that the original idea that there has to be these rights, there has to be social justice, that women have to be respected, that children don't have to be forced into labor, let's say. They don't have to have forced labor and things like that, you know. That children's rights have to be respected. All these is a type of mindset, a type of thinking that has been inherited from, in our opinion, from prophetic teachings. And that is why you will see many of these charters have references towards some religious individuals, either the life of Jesus Christ or the life of Moses, or sometimes even Imam Ali alayhi salam. For example, the letter that he wrote to Malik Ashtar is an accepted charter, even in the United Nations, because they respect this as a charter that was written by a very powerful leader. So these things are there. And if you notice, this creates a type of mindset, a type of path that has been agreed upon. That is what we called an example, or a slight, you can say, we can kind of use this as a similitude to explain what Mahajjatun Qa'imah is, inshallah, which I will elucidate in the coming segment.
IRIB English Radio presents a detailed commentary of the Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him, on the program Gate of Knowledge.
Now, that being said, that you know that we have as human beings these ideas and these principles, and sometimes we can see these in the laws that we make, and the human rights and the charter of human rights, let's say, and other charters that, let's say, the United Nations have and all this. This I use as an example to make you realize that there are certain forms of mindset that is possible that have been inspired by prophetic teachings. But when we talk about mahajjatun qa'ima, we talk about some clear-cut principles that definitely have a divine source. And religious communities, they accept those principles, and somehow that those principles have been shaped by teachings from the prophets. This is what we call mahajjatun qa'ima, not just whatever, let's say, the international community agrees or a certain group of people agree upon. That is not necessarily mahajjatun qa'ima. Mahajjatun qa'ima is a type of lifestyle that may not be written down, that may not have clear reference from the Prophet, but the religious community, they accept this as a principle and they understand that to be having a source in prophetic teachings, though they might not be able to trace it directly, but they understand that to be such. And this is what we called mahajjatun qa'ima. Thank you very much for listening to this part, because I'm sure many have this question. Inshallah, also when you talk about there are discussions in fiqh and usul, the study of jurisprudence and the principles of jurisprudence, where the idea of as-siratul uqala'iyya and as-siratul mutasharri'a have been discussed. These are technical terms, but the ulama have discussed these things also, and they are kind of referring to this idea of mahajjatun qa'ima in a certain manner. Inshallah, those who are interested can refer to those more technical discussions with regards to this issue. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال مناه هو في الشدائد مجيد والفضل يمناه هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي رباه.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. in the limelight.
America's central bank, the U.S. Federal Reserve, has raised interest rates at least 10 times since March of 2022 in order to lower inflation. But according to a recent survey, the move has taken a toll on the wallets of many Americans. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster NBC News has covered this story and tells us more. The U.S. Federal Reserve announced on Wednesday, 26th of July, it has raised its key interest rate by 0.25 percentage point to as much as 5.5%, the highest level in the past 22 years, as it continues to fight persistent inflation in the U.S. economy. Though U.S. officials claim consumer prices have declined for 12 straight months in June, economists say consumer prices increased 3% year on year. They said even though that's the lowest the annual inflation rate has been in more than 2 years, it's still too high for the Federal Reserve, which is looking to wrestle it down to about 2%. By raising its interest rate, the U.S. Federal Reserve hopes to make borrowing and investing more expensive, thereby reducing overall demand for goods, services, and labor in the economy. That effort can put the economy on a path towards a recession, depending on a number of factors. But the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell has said, from the beginning of the central bank's rate hiking campaign, that even though there are no guarantees, he intended to avoid such an outcome. After Wednesday's interest rate announcement, he claimed the central bank no longer expects a recession to occur as a result of the increases, adding that it could bump up the key interest rate even further. Some analysts believe there are still some headwinds to watch for. Greg McBride, Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer, for Bankrate said, inflation remains stubbornly high. He added, the economy has been remarkably resilient. The labor market is purportedly still robust, but that may be contributing to the stubbornly high inflation rate, adding, so U.S. Federal Reserve has to pump the brakes a bit more. The U.S. Federal Reserve is in charge of balancing unemployment and inflation. The Fed believes it can slow the economy to reduce inflation without causing people to lose their jobs en masse. Rather than put workers directly out of a job, Greg McBride said, the U.S. Federal Reserve is instead looking to reduce the overall number of job openings relative to unemployed workers. He added, the labor market is still out of whack. That can contribute to inflationary pressures. While the overall inflation rate has come down, there are key categories of consumer-focused services that have not. In particular, according to calculations from the U.S. Federal Reserve Board of San Francisco, one measure of what has to be known as supercore inflation, which excludes the price of food, gas and shelter, has been stuck at a 4% annual rate of increase since the first quarter of 2021. This measure includes items such as professional and personal care services, among the items on which Americans continue to spend heavily. The spending in turn has created more demand for workers and subsequently increasing pay. According to Bloomberg News Agency, the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said recently at a European Central Bank event in Portugal, he said, the place where we haven't really seen much progress is in non-housing services. That's where we're not seeing a lot of progress yet. And the reason is, one explanation for it is, The labour costs are really the biggest factor by far in most parts of that sector. Of course, higher pay is good for workers, and for the first time in the post-pandemic period, officials claimed inflation-adjusted wages outpacing inflation. But a rapidly rising pace of wage increases concerns the US Federal Reserve because it is linked to higher inflation. Businesses will raise prices if they believe their customers have more money to spend. In a recent note to clients, analysts for the Barclays Financial Group called this a self-reinforcing loop between employment, income and spending. They wrote that they expect the US Federal Reserve to remain focused on slowing the job market to pave the way for a sustained return to the 2% inflation target. Fox News Channel has also covered the same story and tells us more. The US Federal Reserve raised interest rates 10 times at least since March of 2022 in order to lower inflation. But according to a survey by Alliance Life Insurance Company of North America, the move has taken a toll on the wallets of many Americans. In fact, Alliance reported 61% of the American public said they took a financial hit due to raising interest rates in the past 12 months. Rising interest rates could make it more expensive to take out a mortgage, finance a vehicle, and perform other financial transactions. It could also impact the interest rates consumers pay on their credit cards and other forms of debit. In the first quarter of 2023, Americans' collective debt hit a record of more than $17 trillion. In particular, according to a report by TransUnion, credit card debt was at a near-record high of $917 billion. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB, said in a post, "Credit cards are the ones of the most common financial products in our country, providing the bulk of short-term credit for families. Interest rates on the credit cards have risen substantially, with average interest rates going over 20%. Given the trends for the 175 million Americans with credit cards, the CFPB estimates that outstanding credit card debt may continue to set records and could even hit $1 trillion. After the US Federal Reserve met in June, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell expressed that the central bank could raise interest rates again in order to bring inflation down to its target range. Jerome Powell said at a press conference after the last meeting, "Looking ahead, nearly all committee participants view it as likely that some further rate increase will be appropriate this year to bring inflation down to about 2% over time," adding, "I will have more to say about monetary policy and briefly reviewing economic developments." According to the latest Consumer Price Index, the CPI released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, inflation increased 3% in June, reaching a two-year low. But according to Morning Consult chief economist John Lear, these readings may not indicate the US Federal Reserve is close to hitting its target. John Lear said in a statement, "The Consumer Price Index inflation slowed to 3% in June, but don't expect the Federal Reserve to stop raising interest rates. The Federal Reserve cares primarily about the trend in core PCE inflation, which has been persistently elevated for the past 6 months. 1 month of encouraging consumer price index data isn't enough for the Federal Reserve to make a dovish pivot, particularly as it seeks to maintain credibility with the financial markets." According to the Alliance survey, more than 64% of the American public worry that recession is around the corner. That marked an increase from 57% in the first quarter of this year. Baby boomers are particularly concerned, as 67% said they're worried about the recession, as opposed to 63% of millennials. Kelly Levine, Vice President of Consumer Insight at Alliance Life, said in a statement. Many Americans worry that raising interest rates are a harbinger of recession. While there is no official definition of a recession, many economists suggest it represents an economic downturn marked by two consecutive quarters of loss in gross domestic product, or GDP.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program, Hadith of the Day, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we are going to be looking at a very beautiful and noble hadith, which has been transmitted from Imam Ali alayhi salam. This hadith is about self-sacrifice. As you know, we are in the month of Muharram. We are in the second 10 days of Muharram. And, you know, this is a very sad month for all of the followers of the school of thought of the family of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, as well as all of the upholders and proponents of justice and equity, regardless of the faith they belong to. And as you know, in this month, Imam Hussein alaihi salam and his loyal followers and some of his closest family members were martyred on the plains of Karbala because they stood up to the injustices of the tyrants of their time. And because of this, we would like to offer our condolences to our esteemed listeners on this very sad occasion. And the hadith we're looking at today is also tied up to the theme of the revolution of Imam Hussein, because Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he sacrificed himself as well as some of his companions and family members on the path of justice and the path of truth. Imam Ali alayhi salam said the following regarding self-sacrifice. He said, Al-Isar A'lal Makarim, self-sacrifice is the highest of virtues. I think we were to, obviously you know that the virtues within Islamic ethics, there is an hierarchy to them. Some of them are nobler than others. Some of them are higher than others in this hierarchy. And according to this hadith, at the pinnacle and the peak of this hierarchy and this pyramid of virtues, we find self-sacrifice. In another similar hadith, Imam Ali alayhi salam is also reported as having said, self-sacrifice is the best kindness and the highest rank of belief. Al-Isar Ahsanul Ihsan. It is the best kindness. Wa'ala maratibil iman. And it is the highest level of faith or the highest level of belief. When a person's belief achieves its peak and is strengthened to the utmost, it manifests itself in practically in the form of self-sacrifice. Also, Imam Ali alayhi salam again is reported as having said, the best form of generosity is self-sacrifice. This is very clear what this means. You know, generosity can manifest itself in various ways. You know, we can give money to somebody, we can give our time to somebody. The highest form of generosity is when we give our very life, you know, on the path of God and in the service of the needy and those who require our, you know, our sacrifice. Perhaps this is the reason why Imam Ali alayhi salam said, the peak of virtues is self-sacrifice. This is similar to the first hadith we read. Ghayatul Makarim al-Isar. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtue of self-sacrifice in the words of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
This one lay. Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much.